Welcome to Perspective Transformation with Marty and Friends. Whether you're looking for encouragement, practical training, or clear focus, you'll want to grab a notebook, as today's guest trainer shares rock-solid strategies you can implement starting immediately. Sponsored by WomenSpeakers.com, here's your host, Marnie Swedberg.
Hey, welcome, welcome. This is Marnie. I'm excited to be back with you today with our guest, Evelyn Light. We're going to be talking about leadership training inside the heads and hearts of hurting women. We're going to talk about how gals walk through depression, brain fog, and confusion, how surrendering to God's love changes everything. We're going to discuss why wounded women compartmentalize and how to understand that, how to help women to see that they are okay. They're going to be okay. The soul destroying habit of self-blame and how to help your women finally leave it behind. And also the truth of Romans 8:28, that no matter what life throws at you, it is possible to heal and thrive. Our guest today is Evelyn Light. She is such a delight. And she is an author, counselor, and speaker who shares her heart-wrenching real-life experiences related to family addictions and mental health to lead women to Jesus. During this session and with your ladies, our prayer is that you will experience truth, redemption, love, and acceptance. The website for Evelyn is evelynlight.com. And also she's one of our featured speakers over at womenspeakers.com. So we're so excited to welcome you right now to the platform, Evelyn. So great to have you.
Thank you, Marnie. It's wonderful to be here.
And it's been so fun getting to know you over the past several months and your amazing story. We're going to kind of dive into that a little bit as we go through the program here. But you have a lot of experience with just living through some really tough stuff. And so I wanted to have you on today to pick your brain for those of us who haven't really lived through families of addiction, through alcoholism, through abuse, through lots of different things that you have lived through. And a lot of the leaders who are listening to this or will listen in the future have gals in their group that have lived or are living through this. And I'm just bringing you on today to help us understand how we can help other women. And of course, those of you, some of you listening may be already in this situation today where you can just really gain a lot of insight from Evelyn too. So I guess when we come into this conversation, then I want to start by having you describe some of the feelings that you had when you were, I'm going to start with when you were a young woman and living in situations, and maybe you can just start with the emotions and we'll unpack it a little bit more as we go.
I'd love to share what I can, Marnie. I grew up in an alcoholic home. My father was an active alcoholic, and my mother was, you might call her, a flaming codependent. She was a prime enabler. And she was also raised at a time when men were everything, and women had a very hard time having any voice at all. So they married in the 30s. I was born in 1938. I grew up on a farm in the 40s, and we were very poor. A lot of our poverty came from my father's drinking, but a lot of it also came because of the farm ground that he was farming with a team and horses. And we lived without running water, without a bathroom, without electricity. We had kerosene lamps for the first several years of my life and outhouses. And looking back, I've written books about that because the historical value, there's a lot of people who will never understand what that is like unless they go to a third world country.
Right, exactly.
So that's part of the reason for writing the book, is to capture that history for people who are interested in history and what happened back in the 40s and the 50s. Mm-hmm. It was in those days, I felt like no one was in charge in our family, because everything wrapped around my father and his behavior and his drinking. And when he wasn't drinking, he was a really, really good man. Mm-hmm. And he was the only one who ever really showed me any love, which was very confusing for me.
Right.
And part of the reason my mother couldn't do that is because she had babies one after the other. And
exhausted.
Her life was extremely troubled and very busy. And even in spite of all that, we had huge family gatherings. We actually had a lot of fun out there on that farm. My dad's family would come and visit us. My mother's family was right there. We had very, very close-knit family in spite of all the drama and trauma that was going on behind closed doors. Yeah. That's very confusing for a child.
Mm. So as you got into your late teens and then you married, you were dealing with a lot of that confusion morphed kind of into a lifestyle for you.
Yes. We moved to another town where they were building the largest earthen roll dam in the world. Excuse me.
No, you're still recovering from COVID. I'm so glad you're here and I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. It really did affect my throat.
Yeah.
So we moved to this town where there's the largest earthen roll dam in the world when I was only 13. And the town was overcome with construction workers and 24-hour excitement. It was a wild, wild, wild cowboy town. And we did have a lot of exciting days and never a dull moment. And in this town, my dad built a trailer court. So we had a trailer court full of people. And we actually lived right on the Missouri River. And I never realized until I moved away from home that not everybody had a river in their backyard. So we had, those were the days when I actually started. I was 17 years old when I took my first drink. And up until that point, I was very shy, always felt insignificant, always felt insecure, always felt less than the people around me. I was known to apologize for breathing your air. Oh. I tried to be unobtrusive. And yet, even in my unobtrusiveness, I had no filter and no boundaries. So I would say things that were just way out of line and shock people and didn't really know any better back then. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot to learn. But when I was just barely 18, I married a man because that's what you did in the 50s. You got married. And as soon as you got out of high school, but I did it even before I got out of high school. Mm-hmm. Not because I had to, but because I wanted to get away from my family and I thought that was a way out. Mm-hmm. He turned out to be a batterer. We traveled all over the world because he was in the Air Force. So we lived everywhere, California, Denver, Omaha, went to Japan for a couple of years. And I had to have the Air Force send me home from Japan because his abuse was really bad. And I had two children by him. And I absolutely adored them and wanted to protect them and did not know how. And it was that, the fact that I didn't know how to protect my children made me realize that my mother had no way to protect her children either. Yeah. So those are all learning experiences. Yeah. We'd been married 13 years. He'd gotten out of the Air Force and we had come back to South Dakota. And my husband was drinking excessively and very abusive. And my little brother watched this. And I was in the hospital in and out 22 times. I had pneumonia. That was the only way I coped with my stress, was through physical illness. And my little brother came to get me out of the hospital because my husband was nowhere to be found. He was drunk somewhere. And my little brother said to me, "Evelyn, I'm not going to help you anymore. You are putting up with this. You deserve way more than this. And you could be somebody. You're a smart woman. You could be somebody if you wanted to." And shortly after that, my little brother was killed in a rodeo accident. He was a bull rider and he got stepped on. And on my way home from the funeral, I thought, I will be somebody, and I will be somebody to prove you right. And I went back to the town I was living in. I signed up for college. There's a long story that's in a book too. It's a very long story about how I got to college, but I got there and I got a divorce at the risk of my life, because at that point my husband said, I will wait in the garage, and if you and the kids leave the house, I will kill you, I will shoot you. So I had to import a brother who protected us with his own shotgun. And as I'm telling this story now, I am thinking, that was normal for me.
Right.
I didn't think anything of that. I mean, that was just, that's just how
just your life
lived. So I wrote a book about that. So I have a series of books written about my life and my struggles. And my biggest struggle was with God. I was so mad at him. I really, really did not like him. I swore at him. I screamed at him. I told everybody who would listen that he didn't exist or that he was dead. And that even if he did exist, he didn't care about us. And so I don't know if I'm answering your question.
You're doing great.
You're doing great. You know, I think that what you're sharing is you're helping us to understand what it's like to just be in it. Like you said, having somebody say, I'll shoot you and the kids, it was just like, well, you know, that's just part of my life. You know, most women honestly don't have that in their thought processes ever, you know? Yeah. And I think, you know, what you just talked about was there was this transition in your life where you actually realize that God did exist, that he did care about you. You surrendered to him and that changed everything.
That took several years.
Yeah.
First of all, I had to deal with my own alcoholism, which over the years was slowly getting worse. In the beginning, it was nothing compared to the people around me. But over the years, it progressed. And that's how you know it's really alcoholism, because it's progressive. It never stays the same. It continually gets worse. And it is eventually, no matter how quietly you or silently or hiddenly you try to drink, it shows itself in your behavior. And I was so graced by God. That's all you can say. I was working for the state of South Dakota, drinking heartily on every happy hour that I could get to and on weekends, and thinking nothing of it, because as I say, everybody around me drank way more than I did.
Right.
And I tried not to drink when my children were around, and I tried to plan ahead. And planning ahead is another big
part of life.
Warning. If you have to plan your drinking ahead of time, you're in trouble. There's big trouble there. But I planned it so that I would have a babysitter or didn't have any place I had to be, so that it didn't affect my children. I thought that's not true. It did affect them, but I thought I was keeping it from them, and I wasn't. So eventually, a friend of mine who worked for the state said, Evelyn, they need a education specialist over at the Division of Alcoholism, and I think you would be perfect for that job. Well, I thought I would too, because after all, my dad was an alcoholic. I mean, I knew everything there was to know about alcohol, right? So I applied for the job and I got it. And the first thing I did was start studying everything I could so that I could educate the public on what alcoholism was. And in the process of studying this, I started seeing a lot of things that I didn't want to see. And eventually I set up a workshops across the state of South Dakota for ministers, because I had gone to a lot of ministers when I was married to my battering husband, and I didn't get help from any of them. Hmm. Actually, there were about four of them that I went to say, help me. I don't know what to do. Help me. I'm being abused. I'm being battered. Help me. And they all told me, go home and pray.
Wow.
They also told me, if you were the right kind of wife, he'd be the right kind of husband.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm.
And that's what they did back then.
Right. Wow.
And no one understood alcoholism. So my goal at that point was to teach these ministers, if somebody comes to you and they say, help them. You know, this is how you help them.
Right.
And in the process of that, I called ahead to an Alcoholics Anonymous club in the town I was going to do this workshop in. And I had 50 ministers signed up. I had the 12 people from Alcoholics Anonymous coming to do a panel to help these ministers understand what it felt like to be an alcoholic, what signs to look for, how to, you know, what they needed. And as I'm listening to this, I am discovering, oh my God, that's me. That's me. I'm the alcoholic in this room. And I am trying to teach these people how to recognize it. And I got desperately ill because, again, my body acts out everything. It doesn't come out in my behavior, in my emotions. It comes out in my body, and I get desperately ill. And I did once I learned this. And then I did what every smart alcoholic does. I changed jobs.
Oh. Okay.
It's called a geographical escape. And so it took me a while, a lot, you know, quite a bit while longer to acknowledge it. And but that was a God thing. And there was no doubt in my mind that God has been with me every step of the way.
Yeah.
He has supported me. Even when I was a child, there was a sexual abuse incident where God was present. And I didn't know at the time that he was present. But later when I was doing some therapy, it was very obvious that he was present.
Right.
And
yeah,
he has just guided me every step of the way.
Oh, it's so beautiful. And it's such a hard journey, right? But God, I love that phrase, but God. So you talk a lot about compartmentalization and why women, especially in addictive families or abusive situations, compartmentalize. So talk to us about that.
Well, it started with my mom, who put on a good front no matter what, how much pain she was in. You would never know she was in pain. My mother was a very beautiful woman, and she sang solos for the church. And she sang solos at every funeral, every celebration. And there were times when my mother appeared in, and that's the name of my first book, called Just Fine, Thank You.
Yeah.
Because no matter what my mother was going through, if someone would say, and how are you, Edith? She'd say, just fine, thank you. And even though I know now that a lot of people in that area, because it was a small farming community, knew that my dad was a drunk, my mother didn't know it. She was in such denial. She would never allow us to say anything negative about him, and she would never say anything negative about him. So when people would ask her how she was always just fine, thank you. And I learned to do that too. And I still do that today. People say, how are you, Evan? And I'll say, oh, just fine, thank you. And I mean, tell you, sometimes I'm not. But those old patterns just hang on.
I really feel like God gives us a gift, especially for the super traumatic things in our lives, a gift of compartmentalizing them until a time when we're actually in a safe place to process them. Have you found that to be true?
I actually have, and I believe the same thing.
Yeah.
I think that we take certain experiences and we tuck them away. Mm-hmm. And when it's possible, we work through them.
Yeah.
And I don't know, God has put so many wonderful people in my life. I am old enough now so that a lot of the wonderful people God put in my life are gone.
Yeah.
But I had such advantages. He exposed me to Virginia Satir, who is a world-famous family therapist. Mm-hmm. And I actually got to study with her and work with her personally. Mm-hmm. And he exposed me to Father Martin, who is extremely well-known alcohol specialist. And I got to know him personally. And over my life, God has put me in the path of some really knowledgeable people who have just guided me and helped me and shown me the way. And when it was safe, stuff would come out.
Yep.
Stuff I didn't even know was there.
Right. Yeah. 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 And that's what I think. I really view it. I've done such deep healing work with people too in prayer. I really have seen that God graciously tucks some of those things away for a safe time to heal them. And that, that we don't have to say to people, well, you just got to deal with that right now. You know, we just let the Holy Spirit guide that healing process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And God has also given me a gift of helping other people, which I never, ever thought that I would ever be in a position to give back.
I was thinking as you were talking about the kind of famous people that had helped you, and then what you've done with that is you've made that into very accessible training for other people through your books. I mean, your books are not only your story and historical, but they actually walk people through, you know, the process of getting free. And so I just love that about your work. You talk about helping women see that they're okay. And when you say okay, what do you mean by that?
I mean, most women don't feel okay.
Uh-huh. Something's wrong with me.
Something is wrong with me. If I just did this right, just like the minister who told me if you were the right kind of wife, he'd be the right kind of husband. I believed that for years.
Yeah.
For years.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of the women I work with come to me and they know they're flawed.
Yeah.
And they feel like they're flawed in some very fundamental way. And that's not true. It isn't true at all. They're in a flawed relationship, or they've grown up in a dysfunctional home, but they personally are not flawed. And my goal then is to help them see that. And I have a specific kind of therapy called EMDR, eye motion. Eye movement desensitization reprocessing. It's a mouthful. That's why they call it EMDR. But when I trained in that and actually did it for myself, I went through, I never ask anybody to do anything I haven't done.
Yeah.
I did it myself and it opened doors. I didn't even realize I was still carrying so much garbage. Mm-hmm. And as I did this EMDR, I got set free from so many old tapes and so many old messages. And I love doing that for other women and setting them free. And there are, you know, when I was the first one in South Dakota to start doing that, and I got laughed at and poked at and called snake oil.
Oh, boy.
No, everybody's doing it.
Yeah. So it's, you know, what I love about God is that he uses so many different things to free us, right?
Yes.
There are just so many things. And it might just be a girlfriend sitting with you in a coffee shop when God frees you from something. Or you might be at the altar and God frees you from something. Or listening to a song or seeing a sunrise or doing EMDR. I mean, it's like God works in so many ways. But his message to us, I believe, his overall message to us is that he created us the way we are. He loves us with all of ourselves, every mistake, everything. He just loves us, and he longs to have a relationship with us.
And that is the hardest thing for us to accept, yeah. Especially those of us who felt so unlovable, yeah, early in life. And I mean, there are many, many, many people who did not get the nurture that they needed to survive. And I personally only survived because God was there, and he mm-hmm. got me through it. Right. And then he put me in the path of people who would nurture me.
Yeah, later.
And he did it amazing. Yeah. When I think about it, it is so amazing.
Love this God. So a lot of gals who have been abused or have been smashed kind of down by life do a lot of self-blaming. And how did you begin to get past that? Because that's just like ingrained in you because you've always been blamed. So how did you begin to get past that?
Well, first of all, it's important to realize that you blame yourself because you're the only one you have any power over. Mm. So if I blame myself for my husband's abuse, I can change me. I can, and I tried, and I did change me in many ways, but I have no power over him. And all children blame themselves. Mm-hmm. Even if they're 4 or 5 years old, they get sexually abused, it's their fault. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't have been there. They shouldn't have worn what they wore. They shouldn't have done this. They shouldn't have said that. And that is one place where EMDR really, really can help heal those kinds of wounds. Because when you are 5 or 6 years old and you're already worthless or worthless, you grow up with that tag across your chest, I'm worthless. Mm. And to get rid of that takes a lot of work. It doesn't just go away. In my case, God put people in my life to help it make go away. I actually do believe that God does just heal some people.
Right.
But he didn't choose to do that with me.
Right. Not everybody. Yeah. I mean, I really feel like a lot of us, he wants us to walk through the process of the healing process in the same way we walk through life. We don't just turn 2 and then turn 18 and be able to drive a car and do whatever we want. You know, I mean, you got to walk through the process. And I think most of us, yes, walk through processes. Some people, like you say, he just heals in an instant. But for a lot of people, it's a journey. And that coming into a grace-based perspective of life is such a gift. Like for me, I kind of grew up with that. And so for me, it's easy. It's the most natural place to be. But I know that when you didn't grow up with it, and when you had hard things happen to you, it takes a bit to get back there.
Well, I went to a Hellfire Brimstone church as a kid. And this church was very strict. It was a Methodist church. But I had ministers pounding on the pulpit and saying, "You're going to hell." And I had Sunday school teachers telling me, "You can't do this, you can't do that, and you got to go there, and you got to do this." And I didn't hear anything about love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For me, one of the things that was an obstacle, a huge obstacle, is having to earn that love.
Right.
And here's how you earn the love. You dress right, you act right, you think right.
You speak right.
You speak right. Yeah. And if you fall down in any one of those things, you haven't earned it. And you probably won't get there. And I remember I was really, really blessed that when I sobered up and got ready to go back to work, there was a chaplain at the treatment center where I worked. And he worked with me for 2 years to get on the right track. And I kept saying, but I've already committed the unpardonable sin. There's no use. And he said, Evelyn, there is no such thing. I said, oh, yes, there is, and I've done it. And so he was wonderful. He helped me so much. And but that was my first, I mean, I went to church all my life, but the messages I got there weren't great. They were all about the law.
Yeah, and Jesus came to fulfill the law so that we could know God through grace and through faith in Jesus Christ.
Nobody told me that.
Yeah, right. No, I know.
I mean, I'm sure they might have said that.
Right.
But I never heard that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. Evelyn, this is so great. I know one of your favorite verses is Romans 8:28.
All things work together for good for those who serve the Lord.
Yeah.
That really does help me tremendously. Because so even when things are not going well, I know that he's got a plan and I need to stick with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, this has just been a delight. I love you so much. I love your heart and I love your work. You guys need to check out her books. She has a bunch of books. There's some fiction. There's some nonfiction. You can find it all over at EvelynLight.com. She's also one of our speakers at WomenSpeakers.com. So you can invite her to share with your group, especially all the categories that are at her page. But she's just such a wonderful soul to help others understand what it's like and how to come out the other side and help others out the other side. So be sure to check her out. Evelyn, when they go to your website, EvelynLight.com, what are they going to find over there?
They're going to find me and almost everything I've ever done. Please do come. Please visit me. Please, there's a place on there for you to contact me. If you have any comments, any questions, please do visit me. Please contact me. I would love that.
And her fiction book series, a 3-book series, is
That's
a great
not fiction.
That's well, it's not fiction, but it reads like fiction. I need to clarify that. It does. It reads like a story. You know,
it's your story.
It's your story, and it reads like fiction. So, those are great books. If you have somebody in your life that's going through something like this that she's been describing, to share with them. Because it's based on Evelyn's journey. And I think that they would really appreciate knowing somebody else that really can understand them and also some, like you said, historical information in there. So that's fantastic. All right. We are going to wrap this up here, Evelyn. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Marty, it's been a great pleasure. I really appreciate getting to talk with you.
Well, I love you, and I'm so glad you guys were here with us. So great to have you with. We'll see you next time. Have a wonderful rest of your day. Bye-bye.
I love you, too.